connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay.
Listening to Did You Know, a podcast dedicated to the people, places, and culture of Lafayette, Louisiana. I've been fascinated with the wonderful culture of South Louisiana, and this podcast allows our listeners to find out more about why do people want to live here? What's magical about South Louisiana? I'm honored to have as today's guest, Nanette Simon-Cook, not only a very good friend of mine and a Pilates instructor who I admire, but Nanette serves as District 7 City Councilwoman in Lafayette, Louisiana. Nanette, thank you for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for having
me. Yeah, yeah. As I said in the intro, this show focuses on what's special about our community. You know, we're known in Louisiana, Lafayette is a gem. We are surrounded by business people. We call them wildcatters. They're entrepreneurs. But what I find to be really special about Lafayette is the deep respect for family, for our culture. And I think you exemplify what's so good about Lafayette. So I'm honored to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Jan.
Yeah. And let's talk about your background before we get started. I know that you grew up here and your dad was a well-respected councilman, too, Al Simon. Would you talk about growing up here, your family, and what led you to get into politics?
Sure. Well, I agree with you. Lafayette is such a special place, and I think a lot of it is the people. And I feel like that kind of fits into everything that you just described, the people, part of the culture. And we moved here from New Orleans, actually. I was born in New Orleans. We moved here when I was about a year old. My parents were both from New Orleans. But my dad moved here because he got a coaching job at Lafayette High School. And so that's actually what brought us to Lafayette. And then from that moment on, we were here. We were in. I was lucky enough to grow up with parents who, you know, bought into the culture of Lafayette. Mm-hmm. They love the place. They love the people. Immediately, you know, their first, you know, in fact, my mother, her first thought about coming from New Orleans, because she was a diehard New Orleans person.
Oh.
when we moved to Lafayette, she was like, okay, Al, you know, where are you taking me? Because we basically lived by Lafayette High, because he was coaching there. We lived in a house that about three blocks from the high school, but you could see the high school because there was nothing. It was open fields.
Right.
And so she thought, okay, wow, you know, where are we? But again, you know, here we are 50 plus years later living in Lafayette and, you know, grew to love it. He was coaching at Lafayette High when we came here, and then eventually moved on to coach it and teach at UL.
So what did he coach? You know,
he coached basketball at Lafayette High. That was kind of, he coached football. Of course, you know, when you're at a coach in a high school, you coach everything. Mm-hmm. So he coached a lot of the other sports as well, but basketball was his love. So he coached that, you know, and he always, you know, they never made it. They made it to state. They never won a state title, but there was a runner-up title that I remember he brought home, and it was like in the middle of our living room, just this big basketball, you know, bronze, and it's like, so he was, you know, very proud of his years at Lafayette High. In fact, he's 90 now, and he still meets with some of those basketball players. They have a reunion now every year because, you know, he's 90. They want to make sure that he's around. So he really, you know, had a great group of guys and had loved that experience, and then went on to UL and kind of had, you know, a similar experience there, loving doing what he was doing. He was in the PE department.
Uh-huh.
Now they call it the kinesiology department, but he, again, coached a little bit of golf. He actually was the first tennis coach over there at UL. He started, you know, he started the tennis team at UL. And, of course, you know,
moved on
from there, but it become a very successful, you know, still have it today. So he was kind of plugged into the tennis world over there. But,
Is that what motivated you to go into health? I didn't realize your dad's background. I knew he was a city councilman.
Yeah,
but not,
no, it's so funny. I mean, you know, yes, probably so. Not even realizing it. I loved sports growing up. I, you know, played a lot of sports, played a lot of tennis. I started following that course and really interested in the health aspect of it all. And so that's kind of pretty much, you know, was my interest at first, and then took it to the health and PE, and that's kind of probably, you know, followed in his lead. And then, you know, here I am, councilwoman, you know, I'm thinking, okay, Dad, you know, really? But
you really are following in his footsteps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I met you, you know, our husbands are both lawyers. Right. Your husband, David, my husband, John, are friends. And every now and then I practice also. And David's been a stable influence in my life with guidance and all. But what I really think about you, Nanette, is teaching Pilates at Red's. You're one of the best instructors.
You are so nice. That's where we first met, though. Yeah, probably as far as kind of getting closer at that point. Yeah, you know.
And I have a lot of aches and pains right now that I think are due to not doing Pilates more than anything.
Gosh, I have not done it as much as we were doing it regularly either. And I'm like you, I miss it, you know.
Yeah. But, so you teach at
I teach at Cathedral. I teach health and PE at Cathedral, but I only work Tuesday through Friday. I have a great principal, K-I-A. I'm going to throw her name out there because she's awesome. But I work Tuesday through Friday, and I got kind of that gig a couple of years ago because on Mondays, I also work at Lewert Hospital, and I teach classes there, exercise classes there. I don't teach at Red's anymore, but I teach at Lewert's. And so I teach early morning and a noon on Mondays. It's not Pilates. It's kind of a weightlifting, you know, type class. But so I'm still doing that. So
you're busy.
So, and then an early morning on Friday morning. So basically, I have a couple of early mornings doing that. But I still love that. I mean, I love the people over there. They're, you know, it's a great little group of ladies that I teach that, you know. They inspire me. I have ladies in there that are 70-plus years old, and they are still working out. So
Well, good for them.
When I see that, it's like it makes me feel like, you know, look, if we all keep doing this, we keep moving, we'll be all right, you know?
Right. Well, you're busy with the exercise and five children. I know they're grown, but still.
It's so funny. Yes, they're grown, but I feel like I have the furniture warehouse at my house right now because, you know, when they...
Are you the storage pod?
I'm the storage house. You know, when they're in between things, they're coming home, and so... Right now, my youngest just finished at UL, and they're my twins, and actually Eleanor is going on to medical school in Shreveport, so right now she moved everything from the house that she and Chris were living in, and so I have her stuff, and then Christopher is actually going to stay here. He's going to the MBA, going to do the MBA program at UL, so I'll have him. Now, my middle son is in Baton Rouge. He's in law school. He finished his first year, so I'm not storing his furniture right now. And then my other two daughters, of course, Claire moved back, so she's got her own house. And then Emily, my other daughter, is in California.
Is a busy life.
So they are.
Yeah, I remember when Claire was moving back. She's well known for her artistic abilities, her dance. And I have to put this on the air. She called me when they were still in New York, I guess when her husband was finishing his residency. And she said, "Miss Jan, I want to live in Upper Lafayette." She called me, and I know they ended up living closer, you know, on Johnston.
Right.
But they had every intention and were looking, actively looking for homes. And
they were,
It made me feel so good, not only that she was coming back, but that she really valued the more seasoned area of our community. And
she definitely, I remember the house they were looking at, specifically a house in Upper Lafayette.
Right.
Beautiful place. It just, you know, didn't
it
work out.
But
and there are some beautiful homes in that area. It's just, and she really has come to love that area of Lafayette. Now she opened up Basin Arts, she calls it her container for creativity. She has dance classes in there. She has artists in there. But she opened that up on Clinton Street. So she's really, you know.
Downtown.
She's in downtown. And then, of course, Robert. I don't know if you heard about Robert, her husband's new venture.
He
bought the Acadian Superette. So he is right down there on Stewart and Lamar corner. And he's, you know, he's working to get that going. And really,
he's a doctor
by day,
owner.
And he comes in around lunchtime, serves a little lunch, and he goes back to the hospital. So
he's a surgeon, right?
He's amazing. Yes. So they are loving being back.
Multitasking.
Yes, they
God,
are.
I know you're
definitely
proud.
Plugging in. I am very proud of both of them. How hard they're both working so hard to make their businesses successful and to, you know, offer something new to the community. You know, so.
Why do you think they wanted to move back here? Let's talk about that.
Well,
that's part of this podcast, the purpose of this, you know.
Well, that's it. Family. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said family. Family here is so important. And you know, and I think that was probably, you know, I know for Robert, that was definitely one of his motivating factors. You know, his mother was not well when he moved back. And you know, God bless Joni Otan. So, you know, that was definitely one of the reasons they came back, and just to be with family. And then his family, you know, he and his sisters, both Camille and Julia, they're also very close. And so it's, an inspiration to families is looking at them. And then, you know, I'm hoping Claire felt that same way about her family.
I'm sure she did.
But it was, it was, you know, it was a lot of that. And I think just the opportunity that Claire specifically started to see, you know, being in New York for 10 years and plugging in and doing all kind of things there and understanding how you have to be a community there. You have to collaborate with people. You can't do it alone in a city that size. And I think coming here and being so well received by other artists in the community to, you know, combine projects and work together, she was just, you know, thrilled to see that. And I don't want to say she was surprised, but I think she just never thought that she would find that in somewhere other than a big city like New York.
Right.
And Lafayette has that. The arts community is amazing here. I mean, they have come out of the woodworks, people that I had never met before yet that I'm meeting through Claire now that really are so creative. And that, you know, as putting on my councilwoman hat, that is such an important part of our economy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we are known for our festivals, our strong tourism, interest that we have here in terms of all the culture that we have. And it's such a great, team of artists that really help create that atmosphere.
Right. So she's filling a niche. We have the traditional arts, the symphony and the ACA downtown, and those all are very important.
Do a fabulous job too, right?
And I think, it's a plus to have people like Claire wanting to come here and expand what's available and hopefully expose the arts to friends and younger people that may not, their first place to go may not be the symphony, but once they're exposed to beautiful art, then they can see, oh yeah, this does make my life more enriched. And I'm so proud that she's doing what she's doing.
Well, thank you. We went to a show at the Cité des Artistes, the Artiste place, just the Nonsense the other day, last Saturday night, and it was amazing too. And again, all those little small black box theater type performances are wonderful. So, I mean, I think, again, we have a lot of that here, but it's a matter of just, everybody, all the artists all plugging in together and creating this big, giant, thing we call talent here, So, I was actually at Basin Arts last night. She had the Runaway Dish, again, another entity here that provide meals, like dinner parties. Like, they do creative parties for people, and they coupled with Claire, and the project is called Stir, and they're actually doing something with the symphony in the fall. They've designed these individual dinners. There's five of them. The first one was last night, and there's just about a 25 person seating, and they're raising money for their project in the fall with the symphony. But the thing about this project that's so very cool is, okay, they have a dance performance that a different choreographer for each one from Lafayette is doing it. Claire's was the first one. And then it was the Scratch Farms out of Doosan that provided the food. And it was like a seven course. In fact, I'm still full. A seven course meal of this farm to table type organic food that was just delicious. And so, I mean, that's being done, that kind of stuff in little old Lafayette, we're creating those kind of events, with, like the chef that cooked the meal used to be the chef at the French Press.
Oh my gosh.
Great chef.
Yeah. Delicious.
But
food.
Again, she's getting back to the roots, she said, of just, picking it off the bush for the freshness of it, And so, those kind of opportunities, we have, really, we have so many different diversities here in terms of types of restaurants, types of food, types of, events that, if you pull up the calendar of events, and look at, there's so many things
it's
to pick from. In fact,
right.
I was talking to our friend, Anne-Marie Hightower, the other day, and she said, sometimes there's just so much. She said, I don't know what to do. I can't decide. So, I mean, that's kind of a good problem to have,
in
our city. So,
yeah. I'm going to follow up on that. I've never heard of Stir.
And
you can buy tickets to it.
Oh, yeah, four more opportunities. And it's a great sit-down meal with 24 other people you may not know. Yeah, and it was, it's intimate, so no, it was very, very, very much fun.
Right.
So
let's talk about what you do, your side job as city councilwoman. So you represent District 7.
District 7,
which
yes.
is the area, you're in Bendel Gardens and south.
Oil Center is my most northern part. Oil Center, okay. Bendel Gardens, then I go down Penhook toward Broussard. I take in also Garber Road on the other side of the interstate of 90 with the airport, the zoo down that way, and then basically down to Broussard also, and then all the way Carly Saloon to Lewards Hospital, Ambassador side.
Wow.
So it's very spread out, just,
And those areas of town have their own unique issues. I'm sure Oil Center has different needs than Ambassador Caffrey Corridor might.
Different, yes. A very large district with very many different, you know, needs and requests and requirements. So, so it's been interesting. A little over a year, I've learned a lot.
I bet.
Learned a lot. Mm-hmm. All good.
Say less and listen. Huh? I'm sure there's a lot
of
to learn.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Definitely the first year, just a lot of listening. Mm-hmm. I mean, the learning curve, and then I laugh because the first couple of meetings I went to, you know, there's a lot of acronyms here in the city, you know? I mean, I'm sitting there and they're talking in code, you know? It's like, okay, so I have to pull out my little sheet and figure out what, you know, mm-hmm. what we're talking about, a lot of them. So it's that's been a learning curve there. But no, it's been great. I mean, I feel like we have a good group on the council. Mm-hmm. We all seem to get along. We all seem to, we've worked well this past year together. The administration's been great. So I feel very fortunate from stories I've heard in the past that we are. You know, we're moving forward. Yes.
Right. So. What's a typical day like? What type of calls do you get, or what do you have to do as a council person?
Okay. Well, as you can imagine, since August flood, most of the calls are drainage. I mean, we get, you know, I'll probably get about three or four earlier on, right after the flood, of course, we got more than that. But right now, we're probably getting about three or four calls about drainage issues, because there's certain still hot spots in my district that mm-hmm. still need some attention as far as, you know, looking out for them. So, drainage would be probably the number one. And then, you know, then you'll get issues about maybe some trash mm-hmm. wasn't picked up or was skipped or things like just a couple of calls about services that maybe have, you know, been either overlooked or need mm-hmm. addressing, that type of thing. And then there's always zoning issues, why is it zoned like this and we want to rezone this, or mm-hmm. annexations or things like that. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything mm-hmm. as far as those things go.
So it's quality of life issues more than people calling you with big philosophical questions. They typically want something fixed.
Right. Initially, those are the first types of calls we get. Now, when there's an issue coming up, like the smoking ban.
Right.
Yes, we did get a lot of calls about, you know.
You did?
We did, you know, about from both sides. We had the bar owners that were concerned about, you know, how that was mm-hmm. going to affect their business. Mm-hmm. And then we had the other side of the coin that was, you know, so happy that we were going smoke-free. We had the musicians, mm-hmm. you know, weighing in as well, you know, hoping that we would pass the ordinance. So
let's talk about that, what we're actually referring to. We, until recently, people could smoke in bars.
Correct.
Restaurants were smoke-free, if I understand, but not a traditional
bar.
And so when was that presented and when was it passed?
It was presented about a month or so ago, mm-hmm. and actually it's going to be enforced or put in, you know, enacted in August. It's going to go into effect in August. So we've given the bar owners time to kind of ease themselves into it, prepare, because what the requirements are is that in the past it was 25 feet outside of their establishment that you could smoke. It was changed to 5 feet. So we made a little concession there to make it maybe a little bit easier for them to create, because some of those places maybe had a little area right in front where they could put a couple of tables out and or maybe a porch area mm-hmm. that so that they could just step right outside and be able to create some, you know, kind of an environment for their patrons to smoke right there. So this is kind of giving them a little bit of time to kind of, you know, maybe create those spaces mm-hmm. for them to have that non-smoking area right outside their bar. So,
right. I know that there's a lot of concern about what could happen, and statistics show in Louisiana and nationally that once places go smoke-free, actually revenues go up to the establishments. It's actually a lot of people that wouldn't go will now go because it is smoke-free, so hopefully we'll experience
that. Well, you know, if you look at the numbers of people that actually are smokers and that are non-smokers, that 30% of the population are non-smokers now. Excuse me, are smokers, uh-huh. pardon me. And non-smokers are the 70%. So mm-hmm. so the majority are non-smokers. So you figure if you open those doors to the majority, mm-hmm. your business, you know, should not see a decline.
Right.
I think initially the bar owners are, that's their concern. It's like,
of course, because they don't
all
know.
My patrons that are mm-hmm. smoke are going to stop coming. And so how am I going to attract new people to come? But I think it tends to level off to where, mm-hmm. you know, they're thinking, okay, well, I can go, you know, to this particular establishment now. So hopefully that'll happen for them. I mean, that's, you know, we're going to be, in fact, there's one particular bar, I'm going to give them a little shout out in my district, Gloria's. That was that was one that I went to visit because they were a smaller establishment. They were really concerned about the changes, and I'll give them another shout out. It's a very clean establishment.
It's like Cheers. They have regulars.
They have their regulars, I understand that the regulars are smokers, and we are going to hopefully. And I've reached out to them a few times to how we can make that transition a little bit easier for them. In fact, when I went to visit them the first time, they have a nice big front porch. It's a huge front porch. It's wonderful. When I went to see them, they were all sitting out on that front porch, mm-hmm. Smoking their cigarette and drinking. And I thought, y'all are already in compliance. Look at you. You're already there. So I think that if we kind of help them out and kind of give them that support that, look, you can do this. The change is good. And maybe you make a few changes on the interior as far as maybe get some different entertainment in or get maybe something to maybe attract a crowd or, So anyway, but the last thing we wanted that ordinance to do was to shut businesses down. That's not what we given the economy the way it is, we want to keep everybody with a job that they have already. So hopefully that, by giving them enough time to ease into it, let their people know that this is coming and show them that, look, all you got to do is step out and smoke and come on right back in here. Mm-hmm. And, hopefully, the transition won't be so, hard for them. So.
Right. What other big issues have come up since you've been in office? It's been, a year?
Yeah.
You've been in office over a year now.
Well, of course, right off the bat, we had Red Flex. That was initially
the traffic cameras.
We did renew that when we first came on. Now, as the public probably understands, now that we didn't renew the contract, and so we're looking at some options maybe on how we can maybe do some different things, mm-hmm. and maybe it's not using a camera service like that, or maybe it is looking into doing something like that, but finding a better way to actually recoup those fees. I mean, that was kind of the big, there's been a decline in the
revenue.
Payments,
mm-hmm.
So basically that's another issue that, is it really just used for safety or is it used for just another source of revenue? And mm-hmm. how can we bring those two things together to where it really, I do feel like it, according to the numbers, as far as statistics, that it has done some good in terms of traffic accidents in the intersections.
It's changed my driving habits. Like when you see a yellow light, you're more inclined just to stop.
Definitely.
Than to think, I can make it, which is not a safe decision.
Yeah, and I do think most people that I talk to, that's kind of the same thing that they're saying. Yeah,
because I don't want a ticket, and I would pay it. I mean, we're those.
Right, exactly. I never thought that we shouldn't pay it, but.
It's tough when someone has your car and they don't mind, getting tickets, and then I get them in the mail. So we've had a few discussions at home.
We've had those, too. In fact, one of mine discussions was, how we've learned how to.
We
drive a little safer, but then in the course of the conversation, it's like, oh, no, all you do is you slow down at the intersection, then you speed up after. I'm like, no, that's not the intent of that.
Yeah.
So there's still a learning curve for some people,
And maturing,
And that's too.
Drivers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was, kind of an issue right off the bat that we had to come in. And then, of course, always the issue of taxes and, mm-hmm. And millages that we had, all that. And, of course, so there were some other, Right out of the gate, we had a few things that, but honestly, I may be delusional, but it's not anything right now. It's been fairly calm, mm-hmm. And I hate to say that, knock on wood, because the minute I say that, everything's going to blow up. But I do think, we are a council that listens. And I feel like if you are able to do that, I don't want to say that, we can solve every problem that way, but we can at least come up with a solution, hopefully, that everybody can live with, mm-hmm. Maybe not everybody gets their way, but hopefully we can live with it.
I ran for office a few years back, and one thing I want to commend you on is, and people that haven't run for office before, they probably all think we're crazy, mm-hmm. but you really do learn about the community. You learn about what is important to people, and you learn about why things are. Sometimes things don't make sense. And then when you actually find out why things are done the way they are, you can see the accommodations that are made. And have you found that? I mean, did you question things before, and then now you realize, wow, I'm surprised it's this good.
It's true. It is so true. And I feel like when people comment on things, now that I have mm-hmm. kind of learned a little bit more and understand a little bit more why things are done the way they're done, that I'm able to respond to these people a little bit better and try to help them understand too, mm-hmm. because until you actually jump in and see it from the other side, it is hard to understand.
It's easy to criticize mm-hmm. because we just don't know. We don't have the facts.
And we see, a lot of people see, and I'm guilty of that too. You see things how they affect just you. Mm-hmm. You think, I want to change this because I need this. And then, but if you step back and look at the whole picture, okay, yes, but if we do that just for that one person, look at the ripple effect for everyone else. So mm-hmm. you have to find something that everyone can live with. And so, you know, I do ask people to be, understanding of that and maybe mm-hmm. step back and see, you know, is it just about you or can we do something that we can help everybody and you at the same time? Mm-hmm. So that is something that, you know, until you step in and see it, do you realize, okay. Maybe, we need to look at it from a different angle, you know, so.
I think the city council deals with so many issues that most of us don't even, we just don't even know their issues.
There are so many moving parts. That's it. So many moving parts that make it all work, mm-hmm. And it is a little puzzle that you got to, keep it together, so.
One thing I've been looking at is the unified code. I know that building people that are progressive in our community that want to see Lafayette really thrive long term, want to see us do what's called urban infill. And I don't know if you get a lot of discussion on this, and Lafayette has tended to have a lot of subdivisions growing that sprawl,
yes.
is what they call it. It's a disrespectful way to say we're building on land, we're expanding. But I'm really a proponent of looking at infill, going back to the downtown area, the core of Lafayette, and letting people build up and build funkier little homes and use land in a way that maybe we haven't traditionally used. Are those issues that the council looks at, or are those more esoteric issues at this point?
No, those are issues that, I'm not sure if, we look at it as a council, but I know individually we all have. I have mm-hmm. definitely looked at that because I do feel like you do that. I hate the word sprawl because it doesn't sound good. Mm-hmm. But if you want to move out of the city, that should be your prerogative. I don't have a problem with that, but I do think it is important still to create that core and, mm-hmm. and enhance that core. And I know that's kind of what a lot of young people are also looking for. A lot of young professionals, from what I'm understanding, they're looking to move into the city because
mm-hmm. affordable options,
affordable
downtown
options,
area.
And different lifestyle. They want to mm-hmm. be able to walk. They want to be able to take public transportation. So they want to be able to get to work and back home and live in that same area. And and I know in a lot of big cities, that's how you, Claire, when they lived in New York, that's how you survive. You mm-hmm. use that public transit system and you're able to walk and everything is right there. And I'm not going to say we can compare Lafayette to New York, but we do have that, we have that potential to make mm-hmm. that type of lifestyle available, but it does take planning. It's going to take some planning. And I think it's going to take some help from the private sector. I think we have to get some private influence, mm-hmm. an influx of, I hate to say, support financially.
Capital.
To make that happen, because that's something that, looking at our economy with the city and money that we have, there's certain responsibilities that the city has, roads, drainage, safety, mm-hmm. all those things that have to come first. And while the urban core is important, we will need some help financially, mm-hmm. With some private funding to get that going. So we're hoping that maybe we can encourage that and look at that, a little bit more and see, and support it with matching. The city will definitely, jump in when they can jump in and do mm-hmm. something like that, because I do think that's something we all kind of support too as well. But again, right now there's so many different issues that are facing us that, we have to deal with as well. So.
Yeah, and those are somewhat invisible to most of us, getting drainage fixed and, having the traffic lights working right. All those things that we take for granted cost a lot, and they're not like shiny new buildings or improvements.
No, and that goes to quality of life very much mm-hmm. too. Safety, that's very important, mm-hmm. And the drainage issues. People right now, it's every time it rains, I get lots of calls, and I understand where they're coming from. They still have a flashback to mm-hmm. August and are thinking it's going to happen all over again. So, their quality of life right now is, they're living on eggshells. They're walking on eggshells. It's something that, that drainage is an important part mm-hmm. of quality of life for them right now. So those issues, we have to address those. We mm-hmm. have to look at them, and try to do something to help those people out,
Right. So, anything we haven't covered, I wanted to have this opportunity just because, as I said at the beginning, you exemplify all the good things about Lafayette, Annette, and why this is a great family place to live and to move back to when you've gotten your degree somewhere else. Your family shows that it is a good place to come back to. But anything we haven't covered that you might want to talk about?
No, well, I want to first thank you for doing this. And I thank you for doing these podcasts. I think, you know, the more word we can get out about mm-hmm. everything good going on in our community is, you know, it's great. And I commend you for taking that lead and doing this kind of stuff.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, I think people, you know, that, like you said, that don't know and are like blown away when they start hearing about everything mm-hmm. good that's going on in our community. And it can't happen without people like you putting
Thanks.
It out there. So it's good that we do that, you know?
One reason I wanted to do the podcast about Lafayette was, you know, we have a lot of print promotion. And while it's wonderful, it's visually, it shows what's lovely about, you know, the lakes, the scenery and all that we have. But there's something about the spoken word, getting to know the people behind the stories that I really want to delve into. And so
the spirit of Acadiana.
Yeah.
They say that all the time. But this just the spirit here that, you know,
uh-huh.
that you can't see that on paper, but you feel
you can't.
It, you know.
The joie de vivre of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this podcast will prove that, that people that don't know much about us, maybe around the country, will see Acadiana, you know, for all the good things it has to offer, want to come visit and maybe retire here or come to school here if they're
right.
younger. So
it's a great place, yeah.
Yeah. But thank you so much for making time today. And I know you've got a busy schedule. So
you're very welcome. I'm
glad to have you here.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, this has been Nanette Simone Cook in Lafayette, Louisiana, the District 7 Councilwoman. And I want to thank you for listening to us today. We have started our new Facebook site, Did You Know? We're working on that. And we'll have some notes for this show that we'll be uploading on our Facebook page. I'd also like to thank AOC Community Media and William McFarlane, our producer, for producing this show. I'm Jan Swift, and this is Did You Know?
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its Board of Directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.